let's say it's an e-commerce company selling something online, selling shoes online, right? And if you're looking to do growth in such a company, you can't say that, you know, the growth team is part of the mobile team, is part of the engagement slash growth team, etc. If you stuff it that way, and if you make sure that the execution boundaries are limited to, let's say, the mobile app, right? You are by definition imposing blinders on a team to make sure that they just think purely mobile.
Welcome to another exciting conversation on the VWO podcast. In this episode, Seshadri Vyas, product lead at Amazon, shares how you can discover unique growth strategies and build a strong team culture. He also talks about setting realistic growth expectations and collaborating with folks who can drive growth in your organization. But wait, this episode isn't like your regular podcast. It's a unique webinar turned video podcast, and it is delivered to you in the form of an exclusive masterclass. So don't forget to hit that follow button to stay updated with our latest episodes. With that being said, let's join Seshadri and understand more about driving growth and success.
If there's one takeaway today, I think it is this, right? I think I went to a B school. I don't know if most folks on the call are B school. So I have the compulsive need to kind of like fit a framework wherever I can. So this is my very, very creative triangle plus circle mental model. But I hope it sticks with you, right? Essentially saying, if you want to set up a growth team, right? You need to have a lot of the strategies. The strategies are covered on the right-hand side, right? And I will be talking about why growth essentially comes down to distribution, which is the reason why you see distribution at the center of the circle on the right-hand side. And you will also, have how to set up a growth team, right? So that you kind of like are successful in what you do is covered on the left-hand side here, which is probably the first thing that we will start with today. And here I make the case that there are two parts to a growth team. There is a base layer and there is a cream layer, right? As I call it. Essentially, one is sustenance. The other is like for thriving, right? Don't fret if this is a lot of information like stuffed on this slide. I want to start with this so that you folks place the context of what's coming up in the coming slides in this diagram. I will reference back to this towards the end of the content so that there's continuity and able to place where I'm coming from. The base layer of what you see right on the left-hand side triangle is really what I'm going to cover. In order for a successful growth team, I make the case that I think you need to have sponsorship, you need to have great alignment, and that alignment comes in a couple of flavors. You need to have like sponsorship from the highest person in your org, right? And this team needs to directly report to that particular person. I'll just give you a more practical example. If you're a growth product manager, I would strongly urge right, your org or the teams that you're working a part of or have a conversation with the powers that be in your org to have the growth product manager report to either the CEO slash the chief product officer if your company exists, or if it's a business decision maker who calls the shots, make sure that you get the reporting done for that. And the reason I make this case is because it truly unfetters you. It allows you the ability to chase a problem single-mindedly without worrying about the boundaries of an org or who is responsible for what, right? Oftentimes, and we look at it towards the end as well, oftentimes growth teams require a combination of teams coming together to pull something off, right? And if you're just stuck in the silo with reporting to one person down the chain, right, who also does growth as one of the several things in their basket of things, that's a sure shot way for growth to not be successful in your org. I'll draw back to my experience at MakeMyTrip, where I think I was a product manager then, but my manager then was reporting directly to the chief product officer, right? Eventually, growth was this person's responsibility, right? So that made it very clear that, you know, among the basket of things that my manager was owning, I owned only a single piece. And I had direct access, for example, to the chief product officer. My manager was also responsible very strongly for growth. Right? So this kind of like org structure puts in place the, you know, a good way to ensure that you're successful. So if it's not happening, please kind of make sure that you're fighting for this and getting this alignment done within your org. The second major alignment piece that you would need to have is on execution. You just can't operate with like the traditional boundaries, right? And here I'm going to draw up a hypothetical example, right? Let's say ABC Corp or Acme Corp for that matter, right? Has, let's say it's an e-commerce company selling something online, selling shoes online, right? And if you're looking to do growth in such a company, you can't say that, you know, the growth team is part of the mobile team, is part of the engagement / growth team, etc. If you stuff it that way, and if you make sure that the execution boundaries are limited to, let's say, the mobile app, right? You're by definition imposing blinders on a team to make sure that they just think purely mobile, right? By ensuring that alignment happens at the top level and that there are no execution boundaries, you're actually freeing up this team to go start thinking about different other parts of the business, right? I don't know, maybe it's a unique relationship with a supplier who can give you materials for a kick-ass shoe that nobody else is using, right? Maybe it's those kinds of initiatives that you have by default prevented by just drawing these artificial boundaries within an org. And rely again on that, on my Make My Trip example, where we had a lot of wallet-related experiments, right? Wallet, like I think for an e-commerce company, is the ability to influence pricing by putting money that's valid only on that particular product into a user's wallet, right? It's a closed-loop wallet. And we had a lot of experiments on these fronts to run, but the wallet team was different from the growth team, right? Now, traditional org boundaries insisted, like mandated, that we would just stick to, you know, one particular swim lane. But the good thing that I believe that we did in retrospect was that we made sure that this particular team had the ability to cut across boundaries. Obviously, process in the org would be followed, right? So code reviews and approvals and all those mechanisms would definitely be in place. But we would ensure that we had the ability to change anything, everything on the customer experience to payment gateways, to app wallets. We had the ability to go and touch and make a piece of change in that particular code, right? So that, I think, is alignment. And that happens only if you go back to point number one. That's why you're kind of like interlinked, right? Only if you have, let's say, a chief product officer, chief executive officer, somebody who's batting for this company, who's willing to make sure that these boundaries, these artificial boundaries are not imposed on your growth initiative. And that's, I think, step number one is to get the alignment right. Step number two is to get the right kind of people, right? Let's say when you're staffing and you're starting a growth team, this is often counterintuitive advice, right? I think most folks on the call, I'm assuming, are product managers / engineers / analytics professionals, right? So most of these job functions, if you look at the interview process that happens, they just check for functional competencies, which means, can you write a good PRD? Can you think about how good you are you at understanding your users, right? How good is your user empathy skill? And so on and so forth. And there are a number of functional areas that each of these functions can demonstrate your competency on. But ultimately, growth is a role where attitude matters more, right? You need somebody to kind of come in and make sure that they're putting their 100% every day, right? So you need people with a little bit of a passion. You need people with the ability to figure out things even if they don't know answer to. So I've generally, in all the teams that I've been a part of and I've had the chance to set up that, right, argued for attitude being a very key component to growth. It's a trait, it's a behavioral trait, but those are things that you can test for, right? It's not your gut feel. So I'm not implying that you just go by gut. These are things that you need to test for. So when you hire the team, make sure that you're having people who exhibit that trait, and you are checking for it with somebody else inside the company. It might be a product manager, it might be an engineer, might be a design guy or a person, or it could be anybody else from any area. Just make sure that you get them to kind of like check for some of these things, and a ton of like behavioral material is available online if you want to set up your interview process that way. But I make the case that you should do it. And the second one is, give internal folks a shot, right? You'll be surprised at the number of good product managers who come up, especially on growth teams. These are essentially people who are misfits in their particular role, right? You can have a great marketing person who's running campaigns, wanting to do product, and growth is a great transition function for them to get into product, right? You can have an engineer who's showing all of these traits, who's asking these tough questions about users and business growth, right? And this person has an interest in getting into product, but then product has these high walls, entry barriers saying, oh, clear a 6-round interview process, right? I would say, you know, it's a counterintuitive advice, but I would say it's worked very well for me, and I would urge you folks to try it out if it makes sense. The other major point on inputs people is actually, reward for inputs. Right? If you're a growth product manager / engineer, designers, analytics folks are working on at the team at the ground level, right? Those individual contributors / builders, as I call them, should be rewarded for inputs, right? If that input can just be a very strong effort, it can be you know, a metric that they move, which is an input metric and not necessarily the output metric or the outcome for a business. But I think it's important to do that because then it sets people, you know, free, right? They're not worried about whether their bonuses are going to get paid out, whether their promotions are on the line, if this flops, which reduces risk taking and all of that. So I would argue always for the builders on a growth function to actually group team to start with getting rewarded for their inputs. While the accountability starts at the management layer, right? Anyone who's a people manager in some of these teams, and depending upon how senior in the org you get, should be rewarded for either an output or an outcome, right? And I'll just maybe give you a very quick example of what are outcomes, outputs, and inputs, right? Let's say that I'm in Acme Corp, wants to sell shoes online. Growing sales, right, is actually the outcome that the business cares about, right? If that means, you know, the output could just be that, oh, if we increase the funnel conversion rate, right, for people who are starting to do a search to actually doing a payout, that's an output, right? But essentially an input to that would be people who are coming in, opening the app on a daily basis, right? And checking out daily, monthly, weekly, yearly, you name it, right? Those are, I think, on the number of new users who landed up on the mobile app or the website every day. That's a good example of an input. So make sure that the builders on the team are rewarded for their inputs and slowly increase it up till outcomes as the level progresses. This is super important. There are a ton of examples of great companies online who have done this. Google's a great example of this, right? I think, if I'm not wrong, Wave was a product I can't even remember the name. It was such a dud product, right? It was some of their weird interplay between email plus social network plus whatever, right? And it clearly bombed, right? But again, the folks who worked on it, just because they broke new ground on the tech front, right, and were genuinely interested in trying to make it work, actually got rewarded and moved to better promotions. If you read some of the books about Google, right, Eric Schmidt and some of the folks who've actually lived and been a part of that journey, you will see that how they actually take pride in rewarding such people. While the leaders in the org essentially were the ones who are taking responsibility for the outcomes not coming in. So that's my second kind of like advice or view on the people front. The third major part, and just to recap where we are in the triangle part, we're at the base. We are saying that, you know, the North Star, looking at the essential base attributes of a growth team, right? The North Star metric is, I think, super important to have. Establish a metric cadence, right? Just go back what I just talked about for Acme Corp's sales, right? It had an outcome, it had an output, and it had an input, right? For whatever your line of work is, or whatever your business requires, make sure that you create this mental model. As simple and as obvious as it seems, you'd be surprised at the number of companies who don't do this, despite having growth teams which have been running for like a couple of years, for example, right? This is kind of like very funny because this team essentially ends up being a tactical thing that nobody really cares about in the org. The moment you start tying yourself to the outcome, and OKRs is one way to do this. The moment you start tying yourself to an outcome, you will have a pretty solid, way to ensure that whatever work your growth team does have a business impact. And that leads me to the next point, saying once your work has a business impact, talk to leadership about the outcomes. Do not talk to leadership about inputs unless asked for, right? One of the things that I've learned over the years as a manager is leaders/people managers generally come in with much lesser context, 10% of the context, right, that you have as people who are working on this problem statement, and spend only 10% of the time roughly on the topic at hand, right? They're just coming into a meeting, just browsing through a doc, eyeballing it, asking for a few minutes to look at, and they take a decision, right? So start with the outcome, give them the big picture, and then drill down and make sure. This advice I would say is not just for growth teams. I would say this is for teams all around. So make sure that you're kind of like communicating, and we'll talk about more examples of this down the road. So I think the key essential parts that make up great teams, and I'll just start with them again, just to give you a recap, an alignment, pull, and metric. Once you have this base, right, irrespective of, and this is all very hard to accomplish, I know I jumped over it in about 10-15 minutes, but each of these will take you time, will take you many months/weeks of effort, depending upon your org. But once you do this investment, that is super helpful for your org to kind of like land in a good place. But once you do this, it doesn't mean that your org, your growth team is going to going to thrive or excel, right? It just means that they're able to ship something that is relevant and that makes sense for you. Not to kind of thrive and really excel at what you're trying to do, I'm a big proponent of some of these areas, right? Like creating a very strong subculture within the growth team that is distinct in flavor from the rest of the org, right? One of the advices that I've got over the years, and it stuck with me, and it's so deeply relevant here, right? Is all great teams have three things in common, a ritual, a symbol, and a belief, right? A metric installs a belief, right? A ritual is really what I'm talking about here, where you start celebrating some of the wins, et cetera, right? And symbols are obviously visual identifiers, cues, give your team a different name, a different logo, right? Facebook notoriously, for example, had a pirate flag for just a growth team as a way of creating a smaller subculture and identity. That is super important to make sure that people just feel as a herd, they're part of a little small group trying to change the world, right? So I'm a big proponent of some of these things. So, growth teams generally are like hunters and farmers, and not like farmers, right? But I mean, they're not growing stuff. They're actually going out in the wild with just armed with nothing but a spear and then try to kind of take down a wild animal, right? So these people need to kind of like, have a strong sense of belonging. And so some of these rituals that you set up as a leader on the team, like encouraging small wins, appreciating people for good effort or just the passion that they bring to the table, right, is super important and part of like creating great culture and within the team. And don't do it for the optics, which is the complete wrong incentive, sets the wrong incentive, right? Then you're essentially attracting people who are posers or people who are just out to kind of like say, oh, I'm the guy with the chip on my shoulder and I have a part of this great team. And throws their ego around. You don't want to encourage or even set a precedent that kind of behavior is okay and acceptable. This is just to ensure that, you know, the team feels as one, right? And not for the rest of the org to say, oh, that team's sitting on a pedestal, right? So make sure that you kind of like invest in some of these. And if there are questions more, it's a very deep topic and something I'm very passionate about. Happy to kind of get into the role question. And finally, right, own the narrative, right? Which is super, super important. I'll give you a practical example of this, right? I'll come to the theory and then the example after that. The theory is that if you own the narrative, right, you're ensuring that the long-term sustenance of the growth org is in firm footing, right? The people who are working on that particular initiative, who've taken that bet and try to do something that is upstream / like against the norm, have good careers at the end of the day. It's important for you to control that because an org goes through ups and downs, right? Just in the last 6-8 months, the business sentiment around a lot of startups and like new bets has changed, right? If you're running a growth team in that world and you've not owned the narrative, when you move to this world, which is inevitable, where, you know, people are rationalizing their spends and thinking about whether some of these choices make sense or not, right? Is a growth team superfluous and all of that, right? If you own the narrative and if you make sure that the rest of the leadership group in your company gets the message of the value that it is bringing, you're giving air cover for your team. And that is super, super important. I personally faced this at both RazorPay and at MakeMyTrip, right? At MakeMyTrip, it was super important for us to keep circling back on every small win that we would do, right? And I'll tell you, nothing is trivial in this, right? It would just, for example, if you had booked a hotel with us, we would just send you a notification that says, oh, why don't you book a flight with us if you're going to, Bombay or Mumbai, right? It's a very trivial piece of work at the end of the day, right? But it led to a certain number of transactions getting added on a daily basis, which is an outcome that the business cared about, right? Conventional product think would say that, oh, this isn't really meaty enough for me to go and toot my own horn or even promote the work my team has been doing. We've been doing far more technically complex and cutting edge product work. Let's talk about that. Actually not required, right? Because the narrative simply dictates that the business cares about an outcome, which is transactions in the world of travel. And we achieved it. It's important to go communicate that message to the rest of the leadership in your company. So that it's super important for you to, give folks in your team like a great career, right? So with that, let me just pause for a moment. We've just run through the 5 parts of like the essential base work or kind of stuff that you need to do to set up a growth team. I've spent time on this part because this is super important before you go down any strategy. If you're not doing this, no amount of strategy, no amount of like creative investment in like, you know, intellectual prowess will really help you to, will, you know, growth initiative go anywhere. All right. I'm going to jump to the next part, right? Which is essentially the core real growth strategies and frameworks. And there are a ton of this online. A simple Google search will give you way more frameworks than I can cover it possibly in an hour, right? But from my experience, I'll tell you this, right? Growth essentially comes down to, you know, having like amazing distribution, right? This is a very different viewpoint. I don't see a lot of this online, but my experience has told me that you need to have a very unique way to kind of like put your product out on a channel, on a path where people are able to get access to it, which is very different slash has some competitive advantages. So I, through this framework, through the circle framework, and I'm just going to jump a couple of slides back here, right? I'm going to make this case that essentially growth comes down to hacking distribution from these four sources, right? If you look at it, if you look at it, there are these four parts. Yeah. Distribution, growth comes down to cracking distribution. And I make the case that distribution can be cracked through some of these four ways, right? I'll start with the top one, which is having a unique relationship with a supplier or a partner. And that is super important, right? But a bunch of companies that have done this, and I talk about a few examples as I get there. It comes from a very unique tech advantage that only your product or business has. Could come from a unique product attribute, or it could come from an ecosystem that you're a part of that you can leverage strengths, right? So with this, let me start with going deeper into each of these examples. Then start with distribution from suppliers and partners, right? Classic example, and the easiest way to sum up, go through some of these is to make sure that, you know, you have examples in mind. So as you might notice in the coming slides, WhatsApp essentially ticks all of these boxes, right? For example, it has unique advantages from a supplier or partner, which can help, you know, grow faster. WhatsApp, if you have bought some of these phones at like a 5,000 rupee price point or a 6,000 rupee price point, right? WhatsApp comes pre-installed, right? You don't have to go to the Play Store and get it. So that's a growth strategy, which requires a certain kind of changes to the core product offering, not a fundamental change, but just a few enhancements to make sure that this is supported, right? Stuff like app updates. What do you do if the device is running on, if the app is running on 4 versions, 5 versions behind? Stuff that is not technically complicated, but that's important to get done. But if you do that, it is possible to pre-install it. And as you buy the phone, well, WhatsApp is available there, right? WhatsApp also does incredible amount of work on making sure that notification delivery rates are awesome, right? So when was the last time you ever heard anyone say that, oh, I sent you a message on WhatsApp and it didn't pop up on notification product, right? Never, almost never, right? Folks within WhatsApp, for example, track this number to be 99.9999, right? 3 9s and 4 9s. They consider it as a, you know, business outage if you drop by 0.01% there, because at their scale, that's a few thousands of users who are in, right? So they track this very closely. They again do a bunch of stuff. By consuming your battery very aggressively, right? That's a choice that the product has made because they had clarity in their growth strategy, right? They're okay consuming extra battery, and you as a user are fine with it because, look, messaging is a foundational part of what defines your phone experience, right? So you're okay with it. WhatsApp, for example, if you folks are familiar with the mobile paradigm, WhatsApp, even though it goes into the background, always has a connection with some server going on, which ensures that the message delivery happens. So stuff like this is what I'm talking about, where there's clarity in growth strategy leading to product strategy, leading to a unique distribution advantage. Outside of that domain, at booking.com, right? It's a marketplace and it's a very make my trip kind of company, right? Which is e-commerce, travel, etc. They have very unique relationship with the hoteliers. Coming from that world, right? They generally book hoteliers or people who run these hotel establishments are happier taking relationships or taking orders from a website like booking.com than a lot of other players. The reason is because they don't treat them very transactional as some of the other players do, right? So they feel like, oh, if I build a relationship with booking.com. That is good for my business, both at a transaction level and when things are not great, right? Booking.com looks after me and makes sure that, you know, my business is growing along with theirs, right? And can talk about a host of things that booking.com did to kind of like make sure that this is, but this is possible. Let's talk quickly about a tech advantage, right? WhatsApp, as I talked about, has that unique tech advantage where not only do they have partnerships with the phone manufacturers or OEMs, they also have their own notification delivery system, which is bleeding edge, right? Nobody else has that kind of a success rate. And so it a product growth strategy influenced a product strategy, influenced a tech strategy to kind of get distribution done, to kind of get business outcomes done, right? At my last org, RazorPay, payment gateway had incredibly high success rates, right? And if you rewind 5-6 years back, a bunch of companies started out trying to do payment gateways, but essentially very few are standing today and very few are standing as tall as RazorPay is, right? And the reason is, one of the reasons I argue is that the success rates across a variety of pay modes, especially the big ones, is as high as it can possibly be, right? So if you're a business, at the end of the day, you care about getting close to 100% success rates for payment acceptance so you don't lose a hard acquired business. So that is super important. It came because RazorPay invested in making sure their tech stack was superior to a lot of existing players out there, incumbents, plus some of the startups, and they got an advantage. And they invested not just in the core capabilities, even the allied capabilities like documentation, et cetera. Make sure this is possible. The distribution from a product attribute. Classic example of this is, again, WhatsApp, but I'm not going to use that example because I think you folks get the message. Think of something like Zoom, right? Or Slack or Teams. Essentially, these are like Slack and Teams are a new breed of companies which leveraged bottom-up SaaS, right? Typically, to use a messaging product at work, you need a big approvals from a finance person, from an IT officer, et cetera, et cetera. Slack and Zoom inherently leverage on the fact that their core product offering is a multiplayer offer. It's not a single player offer, right? There's no fun in using Zoom or Slack as one person. Makes sense when you get somebody on board. So once you get that first person in, as long as the first person inside a company is able to get another person in, right, the product has a chance. Now, how do you build some of those workflows to ensure that, you know, you're going deeper within a particular team to start with inside a company, then switch across teams, then switch across different business units inside the org, and then subsequently grow to kind of like ensure that once you're ready, feel that this business is ready to monetize, you just will land up and your sales team lands up and says, oh, by the way, you know, 50% of your org is already using my product. I can give you these few additional features which will help you. And I am compliant and all of the things that you want me. So that's really a way to do that. What happens if your product is not a multiplayer product, right? For example, I have look at the Make My Trip referral program. Referral program generally adds the multiplayer nature onto any particular product, which means that you are taking a single player product into and making it a multiplayer product by incentivizing people to do an action, which leads them to kind of talk about it in their network, their friends, or, you know, family groups. There's an organic way to do this, which is what a company like Apple does, where products are just generally beautifully designed and you feel like it's an experience, right? That is great, but just the experience converts a product from being a single player product to a multiplayer product. In cases that you don't have the Apple kind of experience, and to be fair, that's not something that like a lot of companies can get, right? There are other ways to kind of make sure that your product becomes a multiplayer product. And finally, make the case that your ecosystem can also be a significant growth driver. For example, if you folks are familiar with Instagram story, right? Instagram got merged into the Facebook ecosystem and there were, like, if I'm not wrong, about 5 million DAUs. Like, today, Instagram's through the roof, right? I don't even know. I'm pretty sure it crossed the billion mark or somewhere at least close to that number, right? It's perhaps possible because, you know, the early days, a lot of us who used Instagram then would found it very spooky that, oh, my Facebook friends graph is essentially kind of appearing on my Instagram as well, right? Instagram's kind of like, I'm not getting into the privacy aspect of it because I'm sure WhatsApp, Instagram and Facebook can address that. But I'm just getting into the fact that being a part of that ecosystem gave Instagram like a turbo boost. Take credit cards, for example. It's not surprising that most credit cards are a part of a bank's portfolio, right? See, look at a bank. It's a classic ecosystem play, right? If you were to open a bank account today, it's a negative CAC product, right? It's a positive CAC product where the business incurred a lot of cost in acquiring you first, and then it pays out 3%, 5%, some savings rate interest, right? To open a savings account. So they give you money, right? So that you put their money with them. On top of the reason why they find
thank you, Seshadri, for sharing these wonderful insights, and thank you, folks, for sticking with us throughout this episode. Now it's your turn to take action. Implement these game-changing strategies and let us know what impact it had on your business. Also, share this episode with anyone who could benefit from these insights. And don't forget to check out the other fascinating conversations that we've had with industry experts. Before you go, make sure to hit that follow button so that you don't miss a single episode of VWO Podcast. That's a wrap from our side. Until next time, goodbye, take care, and always be testing.